You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host. And in today's episode, our guest will be talking about how he acquired over 600 multifamily units in 5 years.
That's right, Charles. And he'll also go into why relationships are so important for investing and how and why you should turn your failures into successes. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
Hi, everyone. It's Charles Rose Jr. with Breakthrough Investor, where we help you break through that next level as an investor. And with me today, always, is William Palmer, my amazing friend, real estate investor, and the amazing co-host of Breakthrough Investor. William, brother, how fantastic are you doing today?
I am doing great, Charles. Super excited to be here as always, and really, really eager to dive into our next interview. I don't know about you, but spent a little bit of time with him at RubeCon 24 out in St. Louis, and really looking forward to getting to more of kind of his background with real estate, what got him started, and how he got where he's at now.
Yeah, man, this is super exciting for me too, man. This guest, he's a good friend of mine and so helpful. I met him at a meetup that he was putting on in Charlotte, North Carolina some years ago. And I mean, he was just so helpful. Like from the very moment I met him, like he was like helping me like I was already like one of his students or like a family member. And so, you know, it's just so amazing, like all of the knowledge that he's built up. You know, I mean, he has like over 14 years of experience in commercial real estate in New York. And then
all places. Yeah,
I know. Right. That's such a great place to learn commercial real estate. Right. That's like one of the centers of commerce in the world. And
he's a general partner in 5 multifamily properties totaling 663 units. And I think he's done some other pretty serious multifamily type investing in the past. And not only that, he's a coach, like you've already alluded to. Mm-hmm. So really, I really want to know how it all started.
I know, right, William? And the thing about it, too, is like, so he's one of those coaches where like for him, it's truly not about the money. Just like you, William, like William, I see how from my first met you, how helpful you are to people. Like you just want to help them. You just want to share. And Charles is that kind of person, too. He has an amazing giving heart. Right. And so, yeah. So help me welcome to the show, Charles Seaman. What's up, Charles? How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. But boy, that's quite an introduction, guys. I don't know if I can live up to that, but thank you.
Oh, we believe in you.
Oh, yeah. Charles, you can live up to it, man. I've seen you before in places, so I know you can do it, man.
Well, thanks. A pleasure to be here. I'm glad to be on the show.
So Charles, as William mentioned, like, you know, we both know you and spend time with you, but our audience, they're the ones who really want to get to know you today. So we just want to kind of unpack your story from the very beginning. Tell us about your real estate journey. Tell us how you got started and what initially made you decide to be an investor.
Oh, and don't forget the why, Charles. We got to hear the why, because everybody's
It's probably an evolving one. But
And we want to hear all the dirty details too, Charles. So,
absolutely.
Tell us everything.
My story probably started off a little bit different than most, because I always say it wasn't so much that I was an aspiring real estate investor, but it was more so that I was, as I like to say, young, dumb, and broke, and I needed a job. At the time, I was 20 years old. I didn't go to college. I was still kind of searching for what I wanted to do with my life. But in the midst of that, I knew that I needed a job. And I had a job as a bank teller, but I knew that wasn't really going to get me too far in life. And then my mother became disabled, and I thought to myself, well, I'm not going to be able to pay the bills and keep the lights on as a bank teller, so I got to go find a real job. No offense to any bank tellers listening. But why shouldn't I paid a little bit more? So I wound up reaching out to a connection I had. He owned several different businesses, one of which was commercial real estate, also some bars and restaurants, a plumbing company, and some other odds and ends. And eventually, after getting in there, I wound up managing all of his different businesses and properties. And with the different industries I was in, the commercial real estate one is the one that really gravitated to me. And it's the one that I found the most fascinating, because I just enjoyed it and I took a liking to it. And like many other people that are probably listening to the show, a big fan of Robert Kiyosaki and the whole Rich Dad brand, that I've probably read most of those books. So, you know, working where I was working and kind of getting into some personal finance stuff, that's what really catapulted me to take the next step. And, you know, when I first started there, I was 20 years old. I expected to stay there for 2 or 3 years. But as life happens, you sometimes make changes. And I started making more money. I started getting more responsibility. So because of that, I wound up there 14 years, a little bit longer than I intended to be. And it was around the point that I was turning 30. And I said, you know, what am I doing with my life? And I had to really think about it. Because I knew that I didn't really want to do that the rest of my life. I wasn't making bad money. I never would have been rich, but I never would have been poor. And I probably, never say never, but I probably could have had a job for life there if I wanted to. But lo and behold, after really reflecting on it, I realized that this isn't my purpose and this isn't what I wanted out of life. Eventually, my goal was always to do my own thing. And I couldn't do that working for somebody else. So that was really the objective. And after finding that purpose and then, you know, reflecting and kind of figuring out what was holding me back and overcoming a self-limiting belief, I took the leap and just went full-time into it in 2019. And I figured, you know, why not give it the old college try? So I totally uprooted my life, moved to a different city, started fresh, and just went
away. Wow.
Man, wow. That's pretty extreme. I mean, I don't know how many people have done something that extreme for their dream. And I really think more people should do it. So what was, when you picked up and moved, where'd you move to and why'd you pick that area?
Great question. So I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York. Perhaps the accent gives it away, although people tell me I'm losing it now. But I moved to Charlotte. Oh, boy. Moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. And the reason I did that is when we first started, my partners and I, we decided we were going to focus our business in the Carolinas. And whatever market we chose, I was going to move to, because I said, well, how do you get to know the market better than living and working in it every day? And that was my thought. Just put myself right in the center of it. May as well immerse myself in it. And, you know, I'm either going to sink or I'm going to swim.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing, man. But Charles, I mean, like, oh my gosh, like you've done like some amazing things in these 5 years. So William and I, we probably started right around the same time as you in 2019, right, William? But my goodness, like you went for the big ones, man. Like some people, they normally start with like single family and then they work their way up to multifamily. Like what made you decide to jump right into it?
Yeah, how'd you get off in that space specifically, right mm-hmm. off the bat?
Great question. Let me preface this answer by stating I do not recommend this for somebody brand new. So for me personally, I've always been a believer in the philosophy that I'm going to go big, and I'm either going to hit it out of the park or I'm going to sink and, you know, learn the hard way. So that was kind of my mentality, and it's kind of been the way I approached everything with life. I'd like to say that the guy who used to work for New York probably beat that into me, and even though, you know, it was really just an employer-employee relationship, it was almost like a father-son relationship, and he beat a lot of good principles into me. And because of that, I was able to take some of those good principles, hopefully, and parlay them into my own business. And one of the things I learned from him is that, you know what, you can't be afraid to go after things. If you're afraid, you're never going to get the result you want. There are times you're going to get rejected, but you just got to figure out how to withstand the punches and come back and take more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I think the number of people afraid of failing is actually really high. I think everybody naturally has a fear of failing. And then you get some people that they just continue to push through that fear of failing, and they fail. Don't get me wrong. A lot of these people will fail, but they get up, they learn from that failure, and they keep pushing forward. And it sounds like any failures you had, you just got right back up and kept doing it.
That's normally been my philosophy. You know, you're going to have times you get hit, and you're going to have times you fall down, but you have to keep getting up, and you have to keep going. You have to figure out how to adjust. And one thing I always like to do is I like to reflect on things that I do, right or wrong. I like to figure out what I did right and where I can improve the next time. You know, it's okay to make mistakes. What it's not okay to do is make the same mistake time after time. So I tell people I like to make different mistakes, something new, and that helps me to figure out what I, you know, what I should be doing and where I need to adjust to be better.
I'm stealing that, William.
I was just thinking, man, that'd be a great slide for RubeCon for a presentation.
It would be different mistakes. There you go, man. Charles. Okay. So you were talking about mistakes. Let's talk about some of those mistakes along the way, because the whole, you know, I know we had a good talk before, and William shared with you the goal of this show is to really help people break through those limitations. You know, some people might be going through a rough spot in their life and they just need that advice to break through to the next level. So let's talk about some of those breakthroughs and maybe some of the mistakes you made and how you got through that experience, man.
Okay. Let me tell maybe a little more of the story that I left out, and this will kind of lead into the self-limiting belief. So initially, before I moved to Charlotte and went into the multifamily, I briefly dabbled in single family in 2014 and 15. I took a couple of courses on wholesaling and also just single family, hired a mentor. And the reason I did that was because I'd been at my job for almost 10 years at that point. And I thought to myself, well, I don't really want to be doing this. So let me see if I can find a path out and maybe get into real estate. And I really wanted to be in commercial real estate because that's what I was working on in my day job. And I found that exciting. But I also knew that I didn't have the budget for commercial real estate, which is why I started looking at the single family and wholesaling. And at that point, what happened is, you know, I hired a mentor. One of the things he told me is I should be attending meetup events. So I did that. And he drilled some good habits into me. But after a few months of working with him, what I realized was two things. I didn't really like single family. One, because I didn't, you know, it just wasn't what I wanted to do. But two, I wasn't good at it. And it's not to say that I couldn't have developed the skills, but I looked at it as kind of like, darn, I'm doing these big deals at work. And now I'm going out and I can't even get a small deal done on my own. So I was beating myself up, which kind of leads to the self-loathing belief. So what would happen is at these meetup events, you know, I'd go to them week after week, month after month, and I would see some of the same faces, a lot of new faces, and do a lot of networking. And what would happen is when I would see some of these same faces over and over again, people would tell me, you know, you gave me some good advice. They did that and it worked well and I'm doing this. And after a few months, maybe a year or two even, it clicked and I said, huh, why are all these people making money with advice that I'm giving them and I'm not? And I started thinking about it. I mean, it's great that everybody tells me I give good advice, but why are they doing stuff with it and I'm not? And I had to start doing some thinking about it. So what I eventually came to was that I simply lacked the belief in myself. And that's the self-limiting belief, you know. So for a lot of people, they don't believe they can be successful. As you said, some of them don't believe they're worthy of success. You know, I probably had some combination of at least one, maybe both. You know, I didn't go that far psychologically into it, but I'm sure there's, you know, probably at least one of those two in there. And what I started doing is just reprogramming my thinking. So to reprogram your thinking for anybody who's listening, especially if you've been doing it the same way for 32, 33 years, it takes some conscious effort. You know, you have to catch yourself each time your subconscious starts telling you that you can't do something. And you have to start consciously reprogramming, saying, I can do it. I will do it. I am doing it. And by doing that, you eventually reprogram the messaging that's going on in your subconscious. And you start telling yourself, I can do it. And
a little bit like some of the stuff from Napoleon Hill.
Yep. You know, Napoleon Hill, definitely a classic. I've read many of those books and I tend to subscribe to a lot of those philosophies. Now you have to position yourself for success. And part of it is the skills and the expertise, but a larger part of it is what's in between your ears and what you're telling yourself day in and day out. You know, it's the old saying, if you tell yourself you can do something, you're right. If you tell yourself you can't do something, you're also right. So whatever you tell yourself, that's going to be the message that you ultimately wind up living. So which message do you want to live? Do you want to live the one of I can do it or the one of I can't do it?
Wow. That's deep, Charles. So it's like, so the only person who's holding this back from whatever it is ourselves.
Yeah, 100%. It's always the man in the mirror.
Yeah. Yep. I was about to sing Michael Jackson, Man in the Mirror, but
I do love that song. So anybody who doesn't know, it's quite the singing voice.
No, I don't know about that, but you know, let me give it. Starting with the.
Way better than me, Charles. I'm like a bag of dying cats. It's awful.
Now, next year, I'm going to have Charles sing and do the moonwalk so that you can buy tickets for that.
You better start practicing.
So, you know, man, I don't know about that, man. Like, so I was telling, you know, William and Charles had mentioned that I'm, you know, I was shy one time, so not anymore, but I am still shy with singing in public. So I don't know about that. Y'all may have to help me out if I do.
Absolutely.
Man.
After you got started, Charles, how did it progress? Like what started happening? What was your first deal kind of like, if you could lay that out, and then kind of how'd it progress to where you're at now? What are you
doing? Absolutely. So after deciding that single family wasn't the right fit for me, that was probably somewhere in early to mid 2016, I kind of took a step back, just continued working my job and said, let me figure out what's next in life. And within a few months, you know, that was the first time I discovered syndication. Before that, to me, syndication is what happened with the television show when it went off a network. But it wasn't something I knew about in terms of real estate. You know, I attended a free program. I talked about syndication and I said, well, you know, I kind of like this. I can use the skills I already have. I can do the deals I want to do and I can use other people's money. And next thing you know, I wound up taking a few courses further to educate myself on that. And from about mid-2017 on, I started looking for deals. And at that point, I was still working a full-time job. Depending on the week, I was working anywhere from 60 to 90 hours a week. So I knew that my time on the multifamily side had to be very focused because I didn't have a ton of it. So most weeks, I was only putting in 10 to 15 hours a week because that was all I had. But I had to be strategic with it. So what that meant, you know, a lot of times I wouldn't get home from work till 10, 11 o'clock at night. And let me tell you guys a secret. Not too many people want to talk to you at that time at night. So what that meant is I had to find some time during the day to make any phone calls I needed to and be able to do those things. And a lot of times when I was at my job, I didn't really take a lunch break. I'm sure that I could have, but it wasn't really something we emphasized in the company culture. And when I started doing multifamily, I said, okay, I got to take some time. Even if it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, if I can get half an hour, great, whatever it is. And I got to schedule those phone calls in advance. So that way there's a higher probability of me actually connecting with that person versus just taking a shot in the dark and calling them and seeing if I get lucky. And then at nighttime, I would go home and do all the things that didn't necessarily require other people. So that's when I would look at deals and I would kind of do market research and things that I could do at 11 or 12 at night and not be disturbing anybody. So it was just being strategic with how I arranged my schedule to be able to accommodate those things. And after about 2 years, I got to a point where I knew that I had made significant progress, but I also knew that I hadn't made anywhere near the progress I wanted. And part of me was disappointed that I didn't have a deal yet. And that's what kind of led to me saying, okay, as much progress as I've made, it doesn't really feel like I've made any progress because I don't have anything to show for it. That's where I said, okay, let's quit the job I've been at for 14 years and let's move to a different city and let's just go all in and give it the old college try. And from that point, within 3 months of doing that, you know, I wound up actually closing my first deal. Now, let me be clear. It wasn't so much because I did that. It was just coincidence, but it worked out that way. But I was glad that I did because as I was going through that first deal, for anybody here who's brand new to the term syndication, what it means in this context is you're using the resources of different people to get a deal done. And those resources are going to be both time and money. So you're using the sweat equity of certain partners, using the financial strength of other partners, and using the capital of passive investors to go out and close deals. So the first time I did a deal, I'm like, boy, I'm glad I don't have a job because this is quite time consuming. And I said, if I had to make all these phone calls when I had a day job, I don't think that would have happened as well. So, you know, it took about 3 months to close the deal, and knock on wood, that deal went pretty smooth, both the acquisition process and the closing. So I don't have any real horror stories there, but I can probably give you a few good ones from other deals in the future that I learned from. You know, now it was nerve-wracking. We were raising capital from investors. And by the end of our due diligence period, you know, by that point, they hope to have at least a couple of commitments. We didn't have any commitments. And we were a little bit nervous because, okay, are we going to go forward with this deal and potentially lose all the earnest money that we put up? Or are we going to just back out? And, you know, my thought is, well, I didn't uproot my life and move to a different city to back out. So we went this far. We may as well go all the way in. And it was a nail biter. You know, it certainly came down to the wire. Literally, we got a wire transfer in like probably like the day before we needed to close that gave us enough money to close. And, you know, to say that we probably called everybody we'd ever known is probably an understatement. I mean, you know, we started going through yearbooks from high school and you know, junior high and everything.
This always gets me because how do you start that conversation? Yeah. Like most of my stuff is like, if I know somebody might have some money, it's easier because I already know them. But if you're going back to like your high school yearbook, you're like, how do you break the ice and say, hey, I haven't seen you in forever, but can I borrow $100,000?
That's a great question, William. So the thing is, you're right, it's a lot easier when you have a pre-existing relationship and a warm relationship. Like I had maybe pre-existing relationships with these people, but they were people I hadn't talked to in 20 years, so it certainly makes it interesting. So the approach that I took was just kind of shooting the breeze with them, catching up, and then from that point, letting them know what I was doing and seeing if there was any interest. Now, here's a tip for anybody listening that's brand new. So to William's point, you're probably not going to raise a lot of money doing that. We didn't get too much success with that. People want to know who you are when they're investing money with you. They want to feel good about, you know, them actually getting their money back. And in order to do that, that usually takes time. You know, sometimes you get lucky and you'll connect with somebody the first time, or maybe somebody you haven't connected with in a decade or two, and they'll say, sure, I want to invest money in this. But most times they're going to tell you, no, I want to get to know you better first, and I want to I want to see you do some deals so that way I know my money's safe. Yep. So build those relationships as early as you can.
That makes total sense. And Charles, I remember one of the things that you taught me when you meet with people is find a common interest, right? And you told me don't make it about the deal, you know, make the conversation about the common interest and then, you know, the deal will come, right? Yeah.
So it's actually one of my techniques that I use. You know, I say this jokingly, but with a lot of truth. It's rare that I talk about business when I'm doing business because I usually want to talk about other things because that gets people comfortable. When you do that, it makes them more willing and wanting to do business with you.
That's interesting. Isn't that interesting, right, William? Sometimes like some of the best like business relationships, whatever it may be, it's the conversations that are not business. Yeah, I think of even like, you know, talking to my lenders, my contractors, the different people I build relationships with in the business, like when we're talking on the phone, maybe about 10% of that conversation is business, like 90% is like really like catching up like friends, you know, on any call.
And I did sales for a little bit for my family, a company, and we called that the rapport stage of sales. But and you're kind of selling, but not yes and no. But the whole thing that we used to do was don't always talk about why you're there. Like we're there to give them an estimate for something. But when you're walking around, you start building that relationship, that rapport, you make sure people are comfortable. And then at the end of the day, I always took a very no pressure, like, hey, this is the deal. If you're interested, that's great. If you're not, no worries. That's awesome. And then we would start talking about something else all over again.
Pretty similar approach to that. I like that too. I mean, some people are good with the hard sell. It's never been my strong point.
No, I don't like it.
Yeah. Me neither. I'm more relationship-based salesperson.
Absolutely. Yeah. I believe in that like firmly. And I say it all the time, even at RubyConf, the Real Estate We All Builders Conference, in the opening, it like friendship over business, right? Like
100%.
The business is going to come, right? The transactions are going to happen. But when you focus on the friendship, which is the relationship, well, that makes everything link together so quickly, right, Charles?
Yep, sure does. I've seen that many times in life, you know, both in my own business and even working for others. It's like, you know what? It goes a long way.
Absolutely.
So Charles, how have you grown since that first deal? Where are you at now? I know you're a managing member of Cashflow Champs and all that other stuff. Could you explain how that kind of stuff transpired?
Probably the biggest thing is with a lot of hair loss. But
it looks nice in you, though, Charles. I was about to tell you, like, I'm loving it.
It's just migrated, man.
But with anything in life, you're always growing, right? You know, it's often said that if you're in the same place now that you were 5 years ago, then you probably wasted 5 years. With anything you do, you learn what you need to be doing. So when I first started 5 years ago, my focus like on the business side would have been solely on finding deals. And that's still something I enjoy, something I'm good at. It's my favorite part of it. But you also learn that sometimes you have to shift and you have to be in different roles and you have to be flexible. And that's with any business. You know, if you're running a business, sometimes you have to wear multiple hats and you have to become proficient at things that you may not necessarily want to be proficient at. So if you want to grow and you want to scale, aside from just being good at those tasks, you need to be good at dealing with people. And you need to be good at coaching and developing and bringing them up and selecting them. Because if you select the wrong person, that can cause you more grief than anything. So you got to be able to select the right people and then to be able to develop them. So I think with anything, you have to be always developing yourself first. That way you can also develop others and be able to help them grow and help them become more successful at whatever it is they're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Have you found that like putting yourself in the right rooms with the right people doing the kind of stuff that you want to be doing was helpful for you?
Always. You know, even the types of events that you go to, you know, you want to be very intentional. So one thing that the single family mentor I hired almost a decade ago really drilled into me was the importance of being very intentional with everything you do. Mm-hmm. And like even going to a meetup event. But most of us go to meetup events just for the heck of going to meetup events. And I've done that many times. But one thing he always drilled into me is that you need to have a purpose. When you go to that event, you have to have a goal. So figure out what that goal is in advance. Who do you want to meet? How many of those people do you want to meet? And be intentional. So that way you're being selective and you're really focusing on getting the result that you want. So it's going to help you grow and get to the next level. And like the room that I was in 5 years ago, I would have been looking for conferences with, you know, a lot of people that were probably at the same level I was, which was newer and maybe slightly above. But now the room that I'm looking for is, you know, people who are way above me. You know, I want people who are running family offices and people who are running REITs and people who can write much bigger checks than I can. So it's shifting because as you grow, you have to change the crowd that you're with if you want to keep going.
Wow.
Awesome.
That's so cool. And you know, what I love about working with you, Charles, and also you, William, like, you know, is like we're doing things like that to bring people together, right? And so, man, gosh, it's so early to share some things, but we got some big things coming this year, right, guys?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we do. We can't tell anybody about it, but we're just dropping a spoiler. So, you should be tuning in.
Oh, yeah. We got some big announcements coming, and we're all going to be working together just to try to help as many people as possible. And so I just want to encourage you all to continue listening to us and following, because we really want to make your life better. We want to do everything that we can to help you. So, man, Charles, this has been amazing, man. I always enjoy speaking to you, Charles, like, you know, whether it's, you know, at a bar, at a restaurant, at a conference, wherever, you have so much like insightful thoughts and just so many great stories. I always learn something every time I sit down with you. So, man, is there anything that we missed, Charles, to help our audience become a breakthrough investor just like you?
No, I think we covered a lot of the basics. You know, you can probably do another episode on all the mistakes that people can learn from. I've been a plethora of those.
William, make a note of that. We got to do a lot
for everybody.
What I would tell anybody, though, is, and this is going to be probably different than what most people say, I'm going to tell you to get out there and make as many mistakes as you can. Mm. Because the more mistakes you make, the better off you're going to be. Mm. And it goes against the grain. It goes against what we're taught in the school system. It probably goes against what most of our parents teach us. But if you want to be extraordinary, you're not going to get there by doing ordinary things. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. But I heard a saying recently, and I hope I don't butcher it, but things worth doing are hard to get.
So. Absolutely. Right.
That 100%, William, that is so true. The things worth doing are hard to get. If it was so easy, then everybody would be doing it.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's what makes, you know, people like Charles stand out. And absolutely. So, man. Awesome. Charles, I know when I met you, I wanted to get to know you more and more and get your contacts and everything. But if people listening to this episode right now want to listen to you more, want to learn more about you, how can they find you online? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, totally. Well, what I'll do is I'll drop my link tree in the chat box. So that way you can put it in the show notes. And that has most of my social media and different ways to reach me. And you can also reach me by email, charles@cashflowchamps.com with an S at the end.
Awesome. And they can also find you on social media, Charles Seaman, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Like Seaman. Awesome, man. Well, Charles, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. And we look forward to hanging out with you real soon, man.
Likewise. Thanks so much, guys.
See you, Charles.